Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Triple Play Thursday coming up. And you can get your requests into one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We will also discuss if they were to make the movie of the 2016 Cubs, who would play the major roles. We'll discuss that and more. You can get a hold of us at 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. But the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, it is time for our biweekly visit with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he visits with us every couple of weeks to talk TV, and we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much, Nick.
All right. Okay. I'm interested in, we can get right to it. We got some texts here from some listeners. And I'm looking at some of the stuff that you wrote about. On my DVR, which I will watch the first episode in the morning when I get home. I recorded the new show, the pilot for the first episode for Nobodies on TV Land. I was very curious about it. I haven't seen it, and then I saw that you weren't too crazy about it.
It just added very little to my life that I necessarily needed. I already knew it was difficult to make it in Hollywood because I've seen 20 or 30 TV shows and 50 or 60 movies to roughly that purpose. And I know that it's hard to be a comedian in Hollywood. And I guess I probably always supposed that it was difficult to be less famous than Melissa McCarthy. I mean, certainly it's not anything I would know anything about, but I always assumed. Right. And that's pretty much all that the show, unfortunately, is about. It has a bunch of cameos from famous people, including the aforementioned Melissa McCarthy, but also Jason Bateman, Kristen Wiig, Oscar winners Jim Rash and Nat Faxon. But it's just not all that distinctive and not all that necessary. And there's just so much good TV and so much distinctive TV in the world that this is just one of those things that will skate by because Melissa McCarthy is a very powerful person in Hollywood and everyone wants to be adjacent to her. And it's true for TV Land, which is airing the show, and true within the world of the show as well.
And who are besides the cameos that you mentioned, who are the main people who are in it?
The main people, the creators are Hugh Davidson, Larry Dorff, and Rachel Ramirez, who are all part of Groundlings with Melissa McCarthy and with Ben Falcone and with a bunch of the other famous people who appear in the show. And they're the creators of the show, and they're also the stars of the show, playing kind of sort of themselves, basically themselves. There's no way to necessarily distinguish because we don't really know who they are otherwise. And yeah, it's just not all that funny, and there's just so much television about making it in comedy and making it in Hollywood and whatever. And so if I were to tell people that they, you know, should watch one of the shows about this, this would be after Crashing, which we've talked about and I know we both like. This would be after Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel from Amy Sherman-Palladino. It's just a pilot, but it's so vastly better than this, and everyone should go and watch it and vote it up so that Amazon picks it up. They should save a little part of their appetite because I'm Dying Up Here premieres on Showtime in the summer, and it's better than this. There's so much better stuff about the same material. There's no reason to watch a mediocre version of it.
Okay. Well, I'm not looking forward to when I get home in the morning. I'll tell you what.
It's painless. The world is full of painful TV as well. It is not painful. You, I'm sure, could find yourself watching worse. But once again, this is like trial and error last time. I'm trying to get your expectations low enough,
right,
and even then might not be low enough.
Right. Okay. All right. I have to say that the creative endeavors that Melissa McCarthy and Ben Falcone have done together, especially on the movie screen, have been awful. So I didn't have like a huge expectations for this. But I'm just, I was curious to see, you know, what it was. I think it's interesting that TV Land is picked it up.
TV Land has been pushing into the comedy world with a lot of shows that some people really like. You know, they had successful stuff with Your Hot in Cleveland's and whatnot, but there are large numbers of people who really love, for example, Younger, which is a show that I just couldn't get into despite my love for Sutton Foster. But I know many people who love that show. Impastor, which was a show they had for a while. Some people liked that a lot. Lots of people liked the Jim Gaffigan Show, another show about getting into the world of stand-up comedy that was better than this, frankly. So they're, you know, a little bit like the way that TBS has been pushing really aggressively into trying to do new and different things. I don't think they're doing it as well as TBS, but I'm all for the idea that TV Land is trying to make itself a home for scripted comedy on TV. And, you know, this has already been renewed for a second season. So if people like it, they can just get comfortable and invest. I just didn't think it was very good.
Okay. You mentioned Crashing. Let's talk a little bit about that. Have you finished? Have you seen the rest of the episodes?
I have not. I've seen however many I'd seen at the start of the season, so five or six. I don't remember. I think the last one was the last one I saw. That was the Sarah Silverman one, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's where they're at right now. So that was episode six.
Yes, and, that was the last of the ones I saw before the start of the season.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, I really like that show. I really like Pete Holmes, and I think the cameos are great, and I think it's very insightful and very funny. And I thought that the last episode, the Sarah Silverman episode, might be the best one yet. And one of the reasons I loved it. So first of all, I like the fact that Sarah Silverman didn't, you know, she played like she was really nice in it, which is something that you don't really see from Sarah Silverman very often. And I thought the setup was really funny. She's got these two guys that are crashing at her house and she takes Pete Holmes in. All that stuff I thought was very funny. And the whole idea of being a warm-up comic. I have to say, though, Alan Havey stole the whole thing. Alan Havey, but for those of you who didn't see it, Alan Havey plays Rachel Ray's a warm-up comedian for her daytime show. And he has a meltdown on the set. And I've always been a fan of Alan Havey. I go back to the show that he hosted on the Comedy Channel, that late night show, which was like 15 minutes. Do you remember the name of that?
I don't. I mean, he's one of those comics who's very familiar, but who I could not have given you his name. It's just he's one of those people where I know I've seen him a dozen times, 50 times in the past, and just couldn't have put a name on him.
Alan Havey was on a show on Dan. Maybe you can look it up. It was a late night show in the 90s, maybe early 90s. Night After Night is what it was called. And it was on like before it became Comedy Central. It was on the Comedy Channel or whatever it was called before it became Comedy Central. And I really loved it. I thought it was really, really funny. And I've always liked him. And I thought his meltdown in that episode of Crashing, you know, because the fact that he's got to be a warm up comedy, comedian for Rachel Ray. I just thought that was really funny and very, very, very good. And I'm enjoying. I'm sorry.
I thought the fourth episode was the one that sort of turned it for me. That was the one where he starts experiencing barking. It was the one with the cameo by Hannibal Buress. I thought that was the episode that kind of turned the show for me from being a show I was kind of casually enjoying but not loving into a show that I was really liking a lot. And that episode and then the last three of the ones that I saw, I really enjoyed. And I guess I need to remember to set my DVR to watch the seventh episode this weekend.
Yeah, it'll be on Sunday night. I'm really enjoying it, and actually quite a bit. So you said, you know, like a lot of people are covering that kind of thing now, trying to make it in showbiz and all that stuff.
You know, it's fertile territory, and heaven knows it's a thing that writers know, and so it's yielded a lot of good TV shows in the past, and good movies, and some really awful ones, and. And so I don't know that there's a bottomless well or appetite for these, but there's obviously some. And so if you do it well, I'm happy to be there for it.
And you said that the I'm Dying Up Here, that's on Showtime, correct?
That is on Showtime, and it premieres in the summer, and it's set in the 70s in the right. Los Angeles comedy scene. Right. And I'm pretty confident you will enjoy that one. It's it's really good. It's sort of darker and more twisted and more dramatic than Nobody's or Crashing. It's a drama with definite comedic elements because the people in it are funny, but it's very raw. It's very nicely done in a period sense. I've seen two episodes of it. I'm looking forward to seeing a few more before it actually premieres.
And it's going to premiere in the summer. So we got that to look forward to. And Jim Carrey was executive producer on that, correct?
Indeed.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go. We're covering the it's hard to do show business of stuff that's on that's on TV, but we have to break. Dan, hang on, okay?
For sure.
Dan Feinberg is with us. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every other week to talk about TV. There's a ton of TV to talk about. We got some texts here from you, the listeners, that we're going to ask Dan about. And you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. We'll take a break right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here until 5 a.m. And our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us with talk or text. And we are going to be talking a little bit later on. We're going to be talking about the if they made a movie out of the 2016 Cubs season, who would play what parts. We're also going to talk about really outrageous TV show fan theories as well, and we'll get to that and much more. We're talking TV right now with Dan Feinberg. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every other week. Follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we'll continue to talk about TV. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much. I have some great fan theories that are just awful. I'm always happy to talk about that one.
Oh, yeah? Okay, maybe we'll do that before you get out of here. Get into some of those weird things. Now, in the last segment, you mentioned Amy Sherman Palladino's latest, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes.
It's on Amazon. Tell me about that, considering that I love Amy Sherman Palladino very much.
And you definitely should watch it. It is part of the new Amazon pilot season. They do it periodically, and then the shows vanish, and then they come back about a year and a half later, and no one remembers that anyone cared about them, and it's a challenging thing they do. But one of them, and probably the one that is getting the most discussion, is indeed Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and that stars Rachel Brosnahan, who people will probably recognize mostly from House of Cards, but maybe from Manhattan, if anyone watched WGN America's Manhattan, which was a really good show, only two seasons of it. And it's basically set late 50s. It's about a upper crust Jewish woman and her husband. Her husband's an aspiring comic, stand-up comic, and sort of the dingier side of the New York City comedy scene. One of the characters in the show is a young Mr. Lenny Bruce. And through a series of circumstances, people discover that Mrs. Maisel is a very funny woman herself, and that's where things go. And she's sort of vaguely Joan Rivers-esque in terms of sort of the background and sort of, I don't know, the sense of humor that she conveys in this period. But it's a very nice period setting. Rachel Brosnahan is fantastic. She's utterly charming and does marvelously with the Amy Sherman Palladino dialogue. And it crackles nicely. It's funny. It's warm-hearted. It has good period touches. I don't know why Amazon wouldn't pick it up, except that Amazon has had more success with pilots with shows that skewed male. Amazon had a big sort of embarrassment with Good Girls Revolt, which they canceled almost immediately. And it wasn't a great show, but it certainly didn't get any sort of chance to build or find an audience, and this is probably a bit like that, only better. So everyone should check it out, and if they like it, rate it positively, because otherwise Amazon may not know that people care. And it's the best of the pilots that Amazon is premiering, though I also strongly recommend the John Hawkes pilot, The Legend of Master Legend, which is a half hour kind of comedy about a vigilante, not really superhero, fighting crime in the dingier side of Las Vegas. It's really good as well. And all things considered, this was a better round of pilots for Amazon.
Okay.
So
I will definitely. Yeah. I'm both of the ones that you mentioned. I'm interested in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel because of Amy Sherman-Palladino, and I will watch anything with John Hawkes. So.
And I think you would also be amused by Budding Prospects, which is a 1980s set, birth of sort of the Humboldt County marijuana scene. Again, half hour kind of drama, half comedy from the T.C. Boyle novel. It was directed by Terry Zwigoff. And it's also, it's interesting. It doesn't to me feel like a TV series, but it feels like something that I would watch for 90 minutes or 100 minutes if it were a movie. So I can definitely watch a few more episodes of it. It's good as well. Of the four pilots, three of them are really good. And then there's a kind of leaden, not fantastic, science fiction thing called Oasis that isn't good, and then there's an animated thing, the new VIPs from Steve Dildarian. Did you watch The Life and Times of Tim?
No.
Life and Times of Tim, which ran on HBO for two or three seasons. I also think you would really enjoy that. See, I'm just going to throw more and more TV you should watch instead of nobody's. Because really there are just good things out there. I am also reasonably confident that you would really enjoy The Life and Times of Tim, and people would enjoy The Life and Times of Tim. And the new VIPs is a similar sensibility from Steve Dildarian, who has a very sardonic, deadpan, absurdist sense of humor that is very much on a wavelength that I dig, certainly.
Okay, great. Let's talk about, have you caught up with Love yet?
Oh, God, I have not yet caught up on Love. So much TV. So much TV, and Love just kind of remains lingering on the horizon because I can't convince myself to just watch an episode or two of it.
Okay.
So,
I know that you have a ton of stuff to watch, but this has been a good, I mean, I'm 9 episodes deep, and so I've only got 3 more left. And I really, really think Gillian Jacobs needs to get nominated for an Emmy for this. It's the best work she's ever done. And there's a particularly great episode. I think it's episode 8 of this second season of Love, where she is reunited with her estranged father, played by Daniel Stern.
Oh.
That is about as good an episode as I've seen in a really, really long time of any television. And you know, Daniel Stern is great in it. And Gillian Jacobs just continues to just, you know, blow me away. I just think she's great. I think this character is so really complex, and she does such a great job with it in the show. As you know, you've seen season 1. The show is kind of about the differences between people and trying to fall in love and how difficult that can be. But it's also a show about addiction. It's also a show about trying to remain on the straight and narrow. And Gillian Jacobs just rides that line so beautifully. She did in the first season and even more in this second season. I just can't say enough about it.
I definitely do want to watch it. Does Daniel Stern have the giant beard that he had on Manhattan anymore? That's now the second reference to Manhattan. So
he indeed,
anyone has mentioned it.
He has a beard. It's not quite as significant, but he is,
okay.
But he is bearded in it. And it's just, you know, we're going to talk about this after we return from break, because you talked about the best TV guest stars ever. For the IndieWire, and I want to get into that, but this is just a one episode thing. He's not a series regular, and it was just clearly just a one episode thing, and he's great in it, and would be considered, I think, part of the best TV guest stars in a long time. He was just so good on it.
Well, I will one of these days get to it. I'm willing.
Okay, let's take a break again, Dan. Okay, hang on.
Sure.
All right. Dan Feinberg is with us, and he is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we'll come back and talk more television right here on 720 WGN. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Our text and phone number, 312-981-7200. Also, get your Triple Play Thursday requests in now. One artist, three songs, you program at 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg is with me. He is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we're talking television. And Dan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, before the break, I mentioned that you you contributed to this IndieWire piece, the best TV guest stars ever. And I really like what you wrote. Tell everybody about some of the ones that you mentioned, and then ultimately what you ended with.
I like when I can be a little bit more specific on these questions. But this one was best guest stars ever in TV history. That was just really and truly too vague of a question, because there are many decades of potential guest stars. So I went all the way back to William Holden in the classic Hollywood at Last episode of I Love Lucy, where Lucy goes to Hollywood and meets William Holden as himself. But like there were just too many different versions of what a guest star is. So like is a Twilight Zone episode star a guest star? I mean, technically, yes. So that means like Burgess Meredith on Time Enough at Last, or William Shatner in the episode with the gremlin and the plane wing.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just that there are just too many options. So that's one category. And then there are the guest stars who appear for multiple episodes on a thing. So that would be something like Keith Carradine as Wild Bill on Deadwood. And then there's the category of season-long bad guys who are classified as guest stars. So that's someone like Margot Martindale on Justified, or Kevin Spacey on Wise Guy, or Anthony Anderson on The Shield. And so basically I ran through almost all of these, and then I just ended up with Laurie Metcalf on Horace and Pete and with Heather Locklear on Melrose Place, just because for the entire time she was on the show, she was special guest star Heather Locklear the entire time.
I love that. I'd totally forgotten about that, but that was her billing.
You know, so yeah, it's a piece of terminology that's really, really difficult to parse. And so, you know, I've had like 15 names on my list, because then you start getting into one episode guest stars, like the wonderful Carrie Fisher episode of 30 Rock.
Yeah.
It was just marvelous. Or all of the people who had these sort of one episode grotesque, horrifying X-Files guest spots, like Bryan Cranston or Doug Hutchinson. I mean, just so many different possibilities. I haven't even looked through the list to see if anyone was actually grown up enough to give just one answer. I certainly could not have done it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, good for anyone who had the restraint. I would not have been able to.
Well, I do like that the final line. In conclusion, my answer is Laurie Metcalf from Horace and Pete. And people have not seen Horace and Pete. You have to. I thought it was amazing. And that episode, as you know, told me a long time ago, Dan, she is incredible in that episode. Absolutely incredible, and one of the best guest TV appearances I've ever seen.
Too many good answers. And I'm glancing at the article now, and lots of people listing all the great guest stars on The Good Wife. And, you know, how can you be wrong? And the great guest stars on Justified, and the great guest stars on Deadwood, and too many options.
Got it. All right. We have a couple of texts here from listeners, Dan.
Bring it on.
Nick says, how are Designated Survivor and 24 doing?
Well, Designated Survivor is doing okay.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry, Dan. By the way, are the ratings back up? Because the last time we talked, the ratings were down, and nobody knew what was... Nobody knew what
ratings
was
happening. Ratings have returned triumphantly, even though in terms of up or down, just about everything is kind of down this spring. It's
yeah.
been a really lackluster spring of numbers, and certainly Designated Survivor has been down. If you factor in DVR numbers, Live Plus 7 and whatnot, its numbers are pretty good, I would say. And I would guess that it will be back next year. There's no way it's a cheap show to do, because Kiefer Sutherland doesn't work cheap. But the show is also, you know, you can watch it and it feels like a kind of different show almost every week. They're sort of tinkering the show into the direction that they want it to go. And I'm curious to see where it ends up. I don't know. 24 is not doing as well. It's doing much better than APB, which it's airing with on Monday nights, but it's not doing great. But I don't think Fox ever viewed it as necessarily being something that they were going to bring back immediately for next year. So, you know, they'll take they'll take a look, they'll take a wait see. It's definitely not a rousing success. It started off fairly well, obviously airing after the Super Bowl and all, but it has definitely fallen since then. But a lot of stuff on Fox is kind of struggling and stumbling along.
Okay. And Steve says, I just started watching Six. Between Justified, Sons of Anarchy, Vice Principals, and that, Walton Goggins rules. That's basically what all he wanted to say, Dan.
Well, I hope that that Steve is just remembering the most recent things he's seen Walton Goggins in and not saying that those are the reasons he rules and leaping out The Shield, because I will assume that Steve has seen The Shield, which is always the primary and first reason why Walton Goggins rules. All of these other things are also absolutely fine pieces of evidence towards the cause of Walton Goggins ruling, including Six, which is a show that if it were not for Walton Goggins, I would have found completely unwatchable. And even with Walton Goggins, I watched 4 episodes and did not need to watch any more. But Walton Goggins is surprisingly great in it, even if the show around him is kind of a little trashy and jingoistic.
Okay. 630 area code says, have you seen Patriot on Amazon? I'm liking it.
I've seen 1.5 episodes of Patriot, and I will someday pick it up and watch more of it. My colleague at The Hollywood Reporter, Tim Goodman, loved it. When it was in whichever Amazon pilot season it was in, and I think that was about 1.5 years ago now, Tim also liked it significantly more than I did. It's very much a tonal high wire act. It's kind of a trippy deadpan comedy, but also spy thriller and other things. One of these days I will give it the time, but when it comes to Amazon shows, I need to finish. I will still finish Sneaky Pete before, because I really like Sneaky Pete and just haven't had a chance to catch up because, as people may know, there's a lot of TV out there.
Yeah, it's very, very true. All right, let's talk about a feud, Betty and Joan. And now, obviously, the episode that you've spoke so highly of is on Sunday. It airs on Sunday, which is the Academy Awards episode. And I'm really looking forward to it. But I got to tell you, I'm really loving this show. And I really, for some reason, I'm not really sure why, but I think my favorite performance in the show is Alfred Molina as Robert Aldridge. I love him in this. And I think one of the reasons is because I love Robert Aldridge. I love his movies. And I've always loved his sensibility. And just the fact that, like, it's Alfred Molina playing him. In a really, I think, wonderfully written role. I'm enjoying watching the entire show, but I'm really enjoying him.
It's a very sympathetic portrayal or look at a person who at that exact moment was not being looked at sympathetically. So Robert Aldrich had his, you know, he sort of had a rediscovery in the years immediately after this, thanks to, you know, the auteurs and all of that. But at this moment, as the show depicts, he was being looked at as really a journeyman. He was an interchangeable director,
yeah.
And it took French critics basically to validate his career a couple of years later. But you sense that Ryan Murphy is sympathetic to him outside of time, and you definitely sense that Alfred Molina is sympathetic to him. And it's a, I mean, you know, there is no performance that you could select as being your favorite performance here that would be an incorrect performance select.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's just, I mean, I think it's a treat. I'm just having a blast watching it, and I cannot wait for the next episode, as you've talked about so often, that it's the 63 Academy Awards.
It's an amazing amount of fun, and it's also fun to see how much of that Oscar ceremony is on YouTube, and so there is a lot of fun that can be had going back and forth between the episode airing on Sunday and the actual footage and seeing just how uncanny a lot of it is. It's an impressive piece of reproduction.
I did that. I've done that already with this show. You know, gone back and looked at clips from Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And one of my favorite things from the last episode I went back and watched was when they recreated Bette Davis singing Whatever Happened to Baby Jane on the Andy Williams show, And, you know, that's on YouTube. And I watched it, and it's just fantastic. Susan Sarandon did an unbelievable job. And so did the set looked exactly the same. The dress looked exactly the same. And they totally nailed it. And I also loved the scene where Aldridge is directing in last week's episode. Aldridge was directing Frank Sinatra, and Sinatra has the meltdown and just leaves the set. That was one of my favorite. That was one of my favorite things too.
A great little cameo from Toby Huss,
yeah.
who is so fantastic an actor, and anyone who hasn't been watching Halt and Catch Fire, in which he's been giving really, frankly, the best performance of his career. He is a treasure, and more people should respect and honor Toby Huss.
I agree with you 100%. Have you, Dan, seen The Invitation?
I have not.
Okay, he's in it, and he's great in it. And it's like you get that guy, and you get John Carroll Lynch in the same movie. So right there, you know, you're in.
Oh, John Carroll Lynch, so good, and I guess he's been in at least one, maybe more, of the American Horror Story season.
So yeah,
he could just as easily pop into this world at any given time.
That's true.
I kind of wanted to see The Invitation when it came out, and just it didn't really get that much play. One of these days,
It's great. It was on my best of list last year, and it has a stunning final shot. The final shot of that movie is just like it'll knock you for a loop. It's a really good film. So hang on, okay, Dan.
Sure.
Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're talking TV here, and he's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, The Fine Print. And we will come back and talk more TV right after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5. Right now, we're talking with Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And we welcome Dan back to the show. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you much.
Okay, I really, really am curious about the Netflix show 13 Reasons Why. I watched the trailer for it, and it looks really interesting. And the fact that Tom McCarthy is behind it gets me even more excited. Tell everybody about this.
It is based on the fairly successful young adult novel by Jay Asher. It's about 10 years old, and I've heard it described kind of as a YA Gone Girl. I don't know necessarily that I think that's a great description, but it's sort of it's a titillating description, and that's good for people. Basically, the story is a high school girl committed suicide, but before she died, she recorded a series of 13 cassette sides, and it's addressed that it's antiquated in the show, and basically set up a chain letter system in which the tapes get passed to a number of people who she holds responsible in some way for her decision to end her life. And it's very dark, obviously, based on that. And it's sort of about a butterfly effect look at how life can go wrong for a teenager. And so there are a lot of recognizable actors who pop up in small roles in that capacity, but mostly it's young actors. And the lead actress who plays the girl who commits suicide, but she appears frequently throughout in flashbacks, Catherine Langford is her name. She's an Australian actress, and she's just so good. And I've never seen her before in anything. I think she's done stuff in Australia, but I have never seen her before, but she is fantastic. She is she's the rare Australian or British actor whose American accent doesn't distract me, and so that's high praise. But really, it's just a great, well-rounded performance, and a lot of the performances by the young actors, including Dylan Minnette, are just great. And the series itself has some kind of pacing problems. It's 13 hours, and they're full hours, and sometimes they do feel padded. But it's an interesting, thoughtful show with a lot of narrative sort of trickery and structuring to it, because it's the tapes, it's the stuff happening in present day, it's different people's memories of events. It's an ambitious series, and it's aimed at young adults, but it's very mature for young adults, and I think that it's a good and worthwhile series.
Okay.
Netflix.
Great. I'm very excited about it. 13 Reasons Why. When does it actually, when do they start streaming it?
Premieres Friday.
Friday. Okay. Great. All right. Okay. It's our bi-weekly mention of Baskets.
And our last for possibly a year. So
I know.
I'm surprised we didn't just do a full hour on Baskets. But, you know, your call.
What a great season, Dan. I thought it was better than the first season. It wasn't as sort of weird as the first season was. But, you know, Louis Anderson won an Emmy for last season. And, he's even better. And they gave him even more to do. In this season, what do you make of the whole run of Baskets?
I thought it was a great season, and I definitely thought that Louis Anderson was vastly better this season, and he was great last season. But this season, I wrote an article about it on the Hollywood Reporter where I suggested that if someone wanted to make an argument that he was the lead actor on that show for Emmy purposes, I would not quibble with that at all.
I agree.
Look at the 10 episodes of the season. The first two episodes are Chip Baskets, or Zach Galifianakis' clown character basically being a hobo on the rails, and they're almost entirely all him. But of the 8 episodes that followed, 4 or 5 of them are pure and total showcases for Louis Anderson.
Yep.
They're just his story.
Yep.
And he's fantastic. And I said on Twitter that the 3 best female characters on TV for women of a certain age this spring were Joan Crawford, Bette Davis, and Christine Baskets, and I think it's probably close to true.
Yeah, just
an amazing performance.
I gotta say, I didn't expect this, but the season finale made me cry, and I don't expect to cry watching a show about a clown played by Zach Galifianakis. But that's the emotion that went into it this season. I just thought it was great. And I think everybody in it is great. And I mean, the yard sale episode. How funny is Martha in that yard sale with the hat on, not wanting to negotiate with people? Everything about that show is great. And Galifianakis is great with both characters being distinctly different. Again, Louis Anderson, we can't speak enough about how great he is. And it's a terrific show.
It is. The penultimate episode, the yard sale episode, the Christine empowerment second half of that episode, that character has monologues in the second half of that episode where I just wanted to cheer. I didn't want to cry, but I just wanted to cheer the entire time for how great I felt for Christine Baskets and how impressed I was by what Louis Anderson was doing.
That last scene that she has with Peter Jason is fantastic, where she confronts when she confronts Peter Jason. Great stuff. And all across the board. And the season finale was great. And I can't. There's going to be a season 3, obviously.
It has been renewed for a season 3, but it will probably be another 10 months. It'll probably be spring again because Zach Galifianakis has other things he needs to do with his career. And
yeah.
So he'll do those, and that's fine. But yes, I would be perfectly happy if they were to go 13 episodes and if they were to do it more frequently, but everyone's got to work.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I'm not going to give anything away if people are behind, but I love the way it ended, and it sets up something that could be really special for the third season.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Dan, always a pleasure. People can read you at The Hollywood Reporter and follow you on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, FIEN. Always a pleasure, Dan. And if you can get to see Love, try it.
I will. And congratulations on the Walk of Fame.
Oh, thank you, Dan. I appreciate that, man. Thanks very much. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, take care. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN.